Introduction. Nobody ever looks at a drug addict and says, "Man, that guy really has it all together. I wish I could be more like him." You've probably never heard a high-powered CEO or business training guru hold up a drug addict as an example of quality leadership. So what gives with the title of this book? Why on earth would I title my very first book, "Great Leaders Live Like Drug Addicts"? As you'll find out, I know what I'm talking about when it comes to drug addicts. I spent years of my life pumping as much poison into my system as I could. I was an unemployable, homeless, thieving, lying drug addict. How's that for authenticity? But you'll also learn that I know what I'm talking about when it comes to great leaders. I've been clean for 17 years, and in that time, I've been a leader in retail, corporate America, startups, nonprofits, and as an entrepreneur. I'm an award-winning, three-time CEO, and I've taken a startup from nothing to 20,000% growth and a subsequent eight-figure acquisition by a publicly traded company. I've been at the very bottom, and I've spent time at the top. I've sat with drug addicts in more than 2,000 12-step meetings, and I've sat with billionaire business people around mahogany conference tables. And in that time, with both these groups, and this is where I get controversial, I've learned that the same thing drug addicts do that makes them outcasts from society are what leaders do in their effort to become quote-unquote great. Living in addiction. Growing up, I learned that being an addict was a terrible thing, that there was a deep stigma associated with addiction. So, when I became an addict, I was ashamed. I did everything I could to hide that part of me from the world. Drug addicts who are using are in what we call active addiction. And as my active addiction grew worse and I couldn't stop, I continued to lie and hide in order to get what I wanted. I developed tunnel vision. I was so focused on getting what I wanted that I often didn't see the impact I was making on the people I loved or even myself. And sometimes when I could see it, I just didn't care. When my family and friends finally intervened, I yelled and screamed at them like they were crazy. I protested. I stomped my feet. I proclaimed, "I don't have a problem. I'd been throwing up blood, but I honestly believed I was doing fine." I just couldn't see it. I'd spun so many lies I couldn't keep up with what was real and what was fake. Even at rock bottom, I was doing my best to show everyone around me how well off I was. If you had told me to be real, or to be my true self, in my days of active addiction, I wouldn't have known what you were talking about. The lies I told myself and others had become such a big part of my identity that I couldn't see which parts of me were real and which were fake. Over the years, I've been taught that an addict is someone who does the same thing over and over again despite negative consequences. So, after watching endless politician and CEO scandals play out in public, and after coaching thousands of leaders in dozens of fields, my observation is that most leaders learn to act a lot like addicts in active addiction. Sure, leaders may not be facing the same kind of immediate dangers that I did back then, but you'd be surprised how real the danger is for these overworked and overstressed professionals. Most of the leaders I talk to tell me how tired they are, how little free time they have, and how seldom they take a day off to hang out with their families and friends, or pursue hobbies without thinking about work. No matter how hard they work, no matter how much success they achieve, they never truly feel successful enough and always believe they need more. They chase the results they want, whether it's a promotion, more power, a raise, a big team, or the corner office, going out of their way to bury their true selves behind a mask of what they think others expect them to be. They work long hours, forsaking their families, friends, and personal lives. They make decisions they regret because they're scared of losing out or not getting something they want. They feel pressured to project a level of calm control over their responsibilities and teams. They hide their weaknesses and cover up their mistakes, hiding their humanity in the process. They end up becoming so laser-focused on their goals that they become blind to the problem, doing almost anything to get their fix. One addict is hiding his true self on the journey to destitution or death the other addict is hiding her true self on the journey to success. The Hope Shot. As a drug addict, I didn't know there was another way. I was vaguely familiar with recovery, but I thought that was just a punishment. No one ever told me that my addiction, what I believed to be the worst thing about me, could somehow become the best thing about me. I had no idea that I would one day find myself speaking in front of thousands of people declaring that I wasn't successful in spite of the fact that I'm a drug addict. I was successful because I'm a drug addict. Same thing for leaders. Sure, we have heard of authentic leadership, but these days that appears to be more of a fantasy than a reality. Not all leaders are able to relate to having a drug addiction, but most can relate to the belief that the worst thing about them is something they need to hide from the world, especially if they want to be a great leader. And whether you are a business leader, an individual contributor, a stay-at-home parent, or something else, everyone is responsible for leading someone. The problem is, we've become so focused on leading others, we have fundamentally lost the ability to lead ourselves. The reason I wrote this book is twofold. As a drug addict, I learned that there was another way to be an addict that no one had ever showed me, a way to not just survive being an addict, but to thrive as an addict. As a leader, I'm here to tell you that there is also another way to lead, another way to be great that goes against everything we have ever learned, a way to lead that revolutionizes the rules of leadership. Living in recovery. Addicts use all the time, or we don't use at all. It's all or nothing. That's the same attitude we have to have in recovery. We either keep a recovery mindset and do recovery diligently, or we fall right back into our addiction. Our life literally depends on our ability to do the work every day. I will be a drug addict the rest of my life. That's who I am. But every day I have a choice. I can choose active addiction, or I can choose recovery. I got clean on September 1st, 2002, and I have chosen recovery every day since. But if I stop doing what drug addicts do to recover, I'll end up doing what drug addicts do to die. It's that simple. What I'm going to share with you in this book is how I learned true, authentic leadership. I didn't get it from an MBA, college, or leadership seminar. Instead, I got it by fighting for my life in my battle against addiction. When I learned how to become a recovering addict, I didn't just learn how to live. I learned how to do the most important thing any leader can do, lead myself. And when you start truly leading yourself with no lies, no deception, no excuses, no masks, then you'll start leading the people around you differently. You won't just be the kind of leader people want to have, you'll be the kind of leader people want to be. This isn't your ordinary leadership book. You won't find 10 steps to improve efficiency or 5 secrets for boosting your bottom line. And yes, there are already books that talk about what authenticity is and what the benefits are. However, those books aren't showing people how to actually achieve this goal, how to implement systematic changes in their lives and leadership. When I walked into rehab, they didn't just talk about what I needed to do, they showed me how to do it. That's what I want to do for you now. I've taken everything I learned in recovery and everything I learned as a successful leader and CEO over the last 17 years and developed a program that teaches any leader a new way to live and a new way to lead. In this book, I will unpack the process that helps millions of addicts around the world stop hiding what they think is the worst thing about themselves and turn it into the best thing about themselves. Then, I will show you something we haven't seen before, a program that creates great leaders by allowing them to stop hiding who they are, teaches them how to remove the masks they are wearing, and unlocks their secret weapon, their true selves. It's called the Mask-Free Program, and it's not only going to change the way you lead, it's going to change the way you live. As we say in recovery, a head full of recovery will screw up your using. Well, My goal with this book is to screw up your leadership. In a world where so many of our leaders are doing the same thing that active drug addicts do, I want to show you that if you follow a similar process to the one that helps addicts recover, you can stop hiding who you are behind a mask and lead in a fundamentally different way that makes you truly great. You get to choose. You can be a leader who hides who they are, just like an active drug addict, or you can be a leader who shows their true self, just like a recovering drug addict. Either way, you'll find out why great leaders really do live like drug addicts. Chapter 1. I'm Mike. I'm a drug addict. I'm sure you remember your first real job. The nervousness, the commitment, the determination to do everything just right to make the most of the opportunity you've been given. I started that first job back in college. I spent so much time perfecting my role that my grades suffered, and I was eventually kicked out of school for it. I bet all the money I had on this job, which led to me going broke and getting kicked out of my apartment. I poured everything I had into this job with laser focus 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with no breaks. Despite all the success I've had in the years since then, I still identify myself by the first real job I ever had. To this day, whenever I'm around a new group of people, I still introduce myself by that very first job title. Hi, I'm Mike and I'm a drug addict. Let me give you a picture of my normal day at the office back then. I was in Venice Beach at 2 in the morning, sitting with a homeless guy on one side and a prostitute on the other. It was a weird triangle of lies and manipulation. I wanted the homeless man's blunt, a hollowed-out cigar filled with weed. He wanted the prostitute, and the prostitute wanted me to be her last customer of the night. But none of us were honest about what we wanted or what we had to offer. I pretended I had money. I didn't. He pretended he had more weed. He didn't. And she pretended her flirting wasn't an attempted business transaction. It was. All three of us were working overtime pretending to be someone else. That was probably the biggest lesson I learned as an addict, how to be whoever I needed to be in order to get what I wanted. This is a behavior I lived and breathed during my years as an active drug addict. It's also a behavior I've seen nearly every day since. But I'm not talking about something that's only hiding in back alley drug deals or condemned crack houses. No, this is something we've seen most often out in the civilized world of business. We live in a world where most leaders hide behind masks to get what they want. As a result, the rest of us learn to do the same. Then, before we know it, nearly everyone is a quote-unquote mask addict, hiding who we truly are time and time again. I realize it may feel like a stretch to compare drug addiction to mask addiction, to make the claim that practically everyone is addicted to some sort of mask. Well, we know that most addicts remain addicts when they live in denial and refuse to see their problem. So, in order to determine if you are a mask addict, I'm going to start by showing you what addiction looks like through my own story. Then I will show you what it looks like to be a mask addict and why knowing that can give you a significant advantage. Ultimately, you will see how the world of drug addiction and the world of leadership have some stark similarities that most of us would rather ignore. I can't ignore them anymore, and by the time you finish listening to this audiobook, neither will you. We're off to a great start, huh? You've probably never picked up a leadership book that used the terms drug addict, prostitute, blunt, and crack house, and then had the gall to suggest that you are an addict too, all in the first 10 pages. If that didn't tip you off, let me clear it up for you right off the bat. This is not your standard boring vanilla paint-by-numbers leadership book. We're going to deal with some real-life stuff, some things that will probably make you uncomfortable. You're going to hear about some really stupid things I've done, but you'll also hear about the process I use to turn things around. Throughout this audiobook, I'm going to walk you through the program I've developed over the last 17 years that turned a broke, homeless drug addict into an award-winning CEO and entrepreneur. This has been an unbelievable turnaround for me. As you'll see, I was not someone who could have been or should have been trusted. I was the guy who would steal your money and then help you try to find it. But today I'm a guy people trust with their careers and livelihood. Businesses trust me to help them get their startups off the ground. Employees trust me enough to uproot their families and move across the country to work with me. That's nuts. But that's the power of the mask-free program I'm going to teach you in this audiobook. It's a program anyone can use to turn around how they live and lead. To understand it, though, you first have to understand my story. So allow me to introduce you to Michael Brodywaite, circa 2001. My daily wake and bake. Alcohol, weed, food, more alcohol, more weed. If I had written a budget in my early 20s, that would have been it. From the moment I woke up in the morning until whenever I passed out at night, my mission was to get and use as much alcohol and drugs as I could. Some people call this the wake and bake. As soon as I woke up, usually around 11 a.m., I hit the weed pipe. The goal was to get high again as quickly as possible before the hangover from the previous night kicked in. All I wanted to do was get high and stay high. I was a liar and a thief. I stole from my friends and family. I told so many lies that I couldn't remember the truth. Thanks to my addiction, I was kicked out of school, forced out of my house, and fired from my job. Several jobs, actually. I had no money and what I assume was a single-digit credit score. The only thing keeping me off the streets was a friend's couch. That was convenient because the only money I had was what I stole from him during the day while he was at work. I had one pair of pants that didn't fit, and I didn't have a belt to hold them up. So, you'd find me stumbling down the streets of Los Angeles with baggy clown pants cinched up with a piece of rope. Classy, right? At least I had my health, except for the giant beer gut and the blood I had recently thrown up, and the fact that my lungs were so scarred from smoking that I felt like I was drowning every time I took a breath. Oh, and my liver. My doctor once told me that the only thing higher than I was were my liver enzymes. I'm no expert, but that didn't sound good. It didn't matter, though. I was pretty sure I'd be dead by 30 anyway, and I was fine with that. Killing myself slowly. I got into drugs and alcohol in college, and I fell hard into that lifestyle. I quickly became addicted, and I poured poison into my system nonstop. Not surprisingly, my grades took a nosedive, along with my attitude and behavior, and I was ultimately asked to leave school. They really weren't asking me so much as they were kicking me out. And where do you go when school doesn't want you and you're basically unemployable? That's right, you go to work for your parents. I somehow conned my folks into hiring me to digitize a lot of old papers and newsletters they've been wanting to throw out. Here's what that job looked like. I got to their house late in the morning and sat down at the computer with some of the newsletters nearby. I then spent the next 8 hours surfing the internet and pirating thousands of songs online. Throw in some meals from mom and dad's kitchen and some afternoon television, and that shaped up to a full day at the office. Because my parents weren't computer literate, it was easy to excuse a slow progress. "Digitizing all this stuff is technically challenging," I said. "It's a lot of work, but we'll get there. Eventually." Apparently, my skills as a paperwork digitizer earned me another key position with my folks, professional house sitter. My parents decided to take a long vacation and asked me to live in their house for the month. I had three responsibilities while they were gone. 1, take care of my childhood cat. 2, clean out the bird cages every day. 3, shred a stack of old documents they wanted to recycle. "No problem," I said. "I think I can manage all that." Needless to say, I didn't manage any of that. I spent the entire month drunk and high. Every day was pretty much the same. Wake, bake, watch TV, have some food delivered, drink, eat, bake, drink, watch TV, bake, drink, eat, pass out. I don't remember many details about that month. Occasionally, I'd realize someone was mad at me or I'd lost my keys or phone, and the only way to trigger the memories about what happened was to track my trails of vomit. After getting an angry text from a buddy one morning, for example, I found a pile of puke near the front door and remembered, oh yeah, he's mad at me because I kicked him out of the house for beating me at a video game last night. You know you have a problem when you depend on day-old vomit trails for a daily journal. The day before my parents got home from their trip, I realized I hadn't done anything they'd asked me to do. The bird cages had not been changed in 30 days. I hadn't touched the stack of recycling and had no plans of doing so. I had only scooped the cat litter twice in a month. The filth from my complete lack of home hygiene, not to mention a month's worth of bird and cat poop, caused a massive gnat infestation throughout the house. I still laugh remembering myself running around the house, holding a vacuum cleaner in the air, trying to suck up all the gnats flying around. Newsflash, that doesn't work. The only thing of any value I'd done the entire month was keep my cat alive. There was no way I was going to let anything happen to him. The truth is, I love that cat more than I loved myself. During this time, I had pretty much given up on life. I endlessly watched, maybe even worshipped, movies like Leaving Las Vegas and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I tried to overdose. I made poor relationship decisions. I drove drunk all the time. One day I was driving down Sunset Boulevard completely wasted. A police car pulled up beside me, and my first thought was, good. Finally, I guess this is going to be it. It wasn't. The cop just told me to slow down and drove off. An hour later, I took a hard turn at 90 miles per hour and almost flipped my SUV. It would have killed me for sure, but my overriding thought was, whatever. I honestly didn't care if I lived or died. I basically had three options staring me in the face. Die quickly in an overdose or accident, die slowly as the drugs destroyed my body, or get help. Of those three options, the first two of which involved me dying, it was the third that scared me the most. I would rather have died than have to deal with the mess my life had become at that point. Addiction is hard work. Movies, especially comedies, often glorify the drug and alcohol lifestyle. They make it look so fun and carefree, with the wasted goofball being the life of the party. I totally get how addiction can look to the outside world, but that's not how it is at all, at least for me. Being an active drug addict was hard work. Doing the drugs was the easy part. What was hard was having to manage every little piece of my life around my all-consuming need to get high and stay high. Addicts spend entire days doing whatever it takes to fund our habit, including stealing from our friends and family. Anything that didn't lead to a buzz was a buzz kill. Anything that didn't feed my addiction was the enemy. I had to figure out how to turn every interaction and opportunity into a chance to get what I wanted. And, along the way, I had to lie every minute of every day to the people around me about what I was doing and who I'd become. For example, I could never let anyone know that I had a problem. Whenever my family or friends started poking around the edges of that conversation, I immediately shifted into one of three defensive reactions. I laughed it off, got mad, or went into avoidance mode. As much as possible, I avoided any discussion with any person that might lead to a surprise intervention. I didn't see my parents very often because I knew they'd see straight through my bloodshot eyes. As things got really bad, even my drinking buddies got worried about me, so I stopped drinking with them. I didn't want to hear their concerns. Whenever avoidance failed, and someone did get through my defenses and try to confront me, I relied on humor and anger to keep me safe. They were the twin shields I used to hide how weak and broken I really was. My only offensive weapon was lying, and I lied a lot. I lied about having a problem. I lied about stealing from my friends. I lied about having my drug use under control. I lied about my grades, my work, my relationships, and anything else that could have given me away. All my energy was focused on trying to look put together on the outside while I was falling apart on the inside. I also ignored my problem by saying yes to things I had no business saying yes to, even something as stupid as a Big Mac. I'd be drunk and high at home alone, see a McDonald's commercial on TV, and think, man, a burger sounds really good. Then I'd hop in my car and make a burger run, risking my life and the lives of everyone else on the road in the process. Or, if I was completely wasted and barely conscious, but someone offered me a drug I'd never tried before, I said yes. After all, it would have been rude to turn down such a generous offer. So I just kept saying yes, even when it put myself or others in danger. One of the hardest parts of the whole addiction lifestyle for me was the need to act like a completely different person to fit in with whoever I was with. I've always been a pretty sensitive guy with big emotions, but that seemed like the very definition of weakness for a man, at least when I was growing up. When I was a kid, the other guys at school made fun of me relentlessly for being so soft-hearted. The girls seemed to like it, but only up to a point. I was always the safe, reliable, trustworthy friend. Translation, I was the guy girls complained to about the moronic jerks they were dating. The girls, most of whom I had crushes on, came to visit me in my little lovesick prison, safely tucked away in the friend zone, to get my advice on their love lives. My advice? Date me. Of course, I could never say that. It's not what I thought these girlfriends, emphasis on friends, wanted me to be. So, I held back what I was really thinking and fed them what I thought they wanted to hear. After barely getting through the emotional minefield that was high school, I knew sensitive Michael would get eaten alive at college, so I reinvented myself. I became the cool, distant guy who didn't seem to give a crap about anything. Getting high and drunk allowed me to cover up my emotional, quote-unquote, weakness and pretend I was strong, pretend that I was a real man. That seems so weird to me today, because I honestly think my emotional intelligence is one of the most valuable things about me. It's what ultimately helped me build a business and a platform to help people. In a way, it's why you're listening to this audiobook. Throughout my entire life, I had something uniquely valuable to offer the world, and I held it back out of fear. I wasted so much time and energy trying to hold back what made me me, and it was exhausting. My drug addiction didn't just make me a drug addict. It also made me a fraud. It impacted every part of my life and changed every one of my behaviors. It aligned every thought, desire, and action around a single goal: to get high and stay high. As hard as it was to get clean, my life before recovery was 10 times harder. My worst day clean is better than my best day using. It was an endless loop of lying and hiding, never giving me a chance to be real, to be me. Getting free of that, I've discovered, is one of the greatest gifts of recovery, but it's one most people have never really thought about. It's time to think about it. Life in recovery. Before I get into the specifics of the program I'm going to unpack for you in this book, I need to show you how this material transformed my own life and leadership. You've already gotten a glimpse of me at my worst. Now let's look at what my life is like in recovery. My first job out of rehab was a retail position at a local Sam Goody music store. I wasn't changing the world, but I could at least save a few people from wasting their money on Phish albums. After a while, I was ready to step up and took a sales position at a huge Fortune 50 company. I was pretty good at it, and I discovered a passion for business and leadership. I broke a few company sales records and got my leaders' attention. They made me a sales manager, and the team I led consistently outsold the other teams. It was weird looking back on the time just a couple of years earlier when I felt worthless and wanted to die. The drunk, depressed, semi-suicidal guy was gone, replaced by a bright-eyed, optimistic, award-winning professional. By 2010, the nation was wading through a serious recession, but I was riding high on a wave of success and enthusiasm. Jobs were scarce back then, and I was blessed to have a solid position at a relatively secure company. There was only one problem. I was ready to leave. I loved my job, but I had a burning passion to do more. I wanted to build something, to create something new and powerful that would change the world. It was my life's dream to become a successful entrepreneur. I lost that dream to my addiction, but they taught me in recovery that my lost dreams could be reawakened. I'd spent the last several years consuming business and leadership books with the same appetite I used to have for drugs and alcohol, and I was bursting at the seams to prove myself on my own. So I made the tough decision to leave my safe position and co-founding Quikr, a healthcare software as a service startup. My business partner and I created a company that revolutionized how patients schedule appointments with doctors and hospitals, moving it from phone calls to a quick, convenient online scheduling and check-in system. This dramatically reduced wait times for hundreds of thousands of patients every year in hundreds of hospitals and doctors' offices across 30 states. More importantly, we created a work culture and system of leadership that shot through the healthcare market like lightning. During my 6 years as CEO, Quikr experienced 20,000% revenue growth, which earned us a spot on the Inc. 500 list of fastest-growing companies. We were named one of the best places to work by the Nashville Business Journal 4 times and were recognized by the Nashville Chamber of Commerce as Healthcare Company of the Year. Our company, team, revenues, and national impact exploded. And in 2015, Quikr was acquired by a publicly traded company. Let's put this in perspective. At age 21, I was hopelessly addicted to drugs and wanted to die. At 23, I fought through recovery and started a new life with nothing more than the promise that the principles I learned in recovery would enable me to survive and thrive. At age 36, I was a millionaire and an award-winning CEO. Then at 37, I became the CEO of the Nashville Entrepreneur Center, the front door to Nashville's entrepreneurial ecosystem. In my time there, we tripled our impact from helping 700 entrepreneurs start or grow a business per year to helping 2,000. Today, I'm a 3-time CEO and a full-time business and leadership coach who is asked to speak to thousands of professionals every year. How in the world did this happen? How did I get here from where I started? It's because I realized that to live like a recovering addict meant I had to lead like one too. Thank God for addiction. I've been on a wild, strange journey through life and business for the past 17 years, and I know, there's value for you in what I've discovered. That value isn't about me, however. It's about the foundation I was given in recovery when I learned a program and set of principles that saved my life. That's why I can make the bold claim that I'm thankful for my drug addiction. In fact, I'm more thankful for my addiction than I am for anything else in my life. Thanks to my addiction, I was able to take everything I learned in recovery, combine it with everything I've learned as a leader, and create the program and set of principles that I will share with you in this audiobook. What I've learned in recovery showed me how to truly live like I've never lived before. I'm not successful today in spite of my addiction. I'm successful because of my addiction. Like a fellow addict once told me, "You know what we do in these meetings? We turn crap into fertilizer." Lucky for me, I've had access to an enormous pile of fertilizer. Many people would assume my addiction was the worst thing ever, the thing I'd want to spend the rest of my life forgetting. No way. Sure, my addiction was the worst thing in my life for a while. But now it's the best thing about me because it gave me a competitive advantage I'll explain in Chapter 3. If I had stayed the same person I was that night on Venice Beach, I would have been dead by age 30. There's no doubt in my mind. But I didn't stay there. I got help. I entered recovery, and recovery taught me how to stop lying about who I am and what I want out of life. Recovery taught me how to be real, really real, for the first time. And now, I can't imagine what my life would be like today without that experience. We've been trained our whole lives to do X, Y, and Z to get the results we want. Sadly, X, Y, and Z rarely reflect who we really are. We learn to put on a happy face, put our best foot forward, and never let them see us sweat. But there's a high price to pay for hiding our true selves. Fortunately, there's good news. You can get all the things you want in life without paying that price. I'm going to show you how to unlock a secret superpower, the single biggest untapped competitive advantage you could ever imagine, that will make you a hero to your company, team, community, family, and friends. It's a skill anyone can master, but few ever do. A skill that will unlock your true potential in a way you never thought possible. It's the skill of living mask-free. The skill of living mask-free enabled me to flourish at all levels of leadership, from retail to corporate manager to CEO, and to build and grow award-winning teams. I've also used it outside of work to improve every other part of my life, including getting rid of $100,000 in debt, losing 40 pounds, and growing into the husband and father my family deserves. In every part of my life, I've seen firsthand how much better life can be when you're bold enough to live mask-free, to be the real you, no matter what. If you're listening to this audiobook, I want you to know right now that it's possible to both let your guard down and be a successful leader, if you're ready to do what I've done for the last 17 years. My dreams were unlocked when I took the steps necessary to get clean. But when I started, it wasn't easy, and it certainly wasn't comfortable. I remember freaking out about the entire recovery process early on and nearly talking myself out of it. That's when the counselors gave me some of the best advice I've ever received. Don't think about doing this for the rest of your life right now. Focus on doing it one day at a time. All that matters today is that you do it today. That gave me the peace I needed to take the next step, even when I wasn't sure what the next step was. The rest of this book offers you a program that can give you the unimaginable courage to be your true self no matter the odds. And for this process to work, all you have to do is decide to take that next step. But remember, you don't have to focus on forever. You just have to focus on today. Chapter 1, Footnote 1. This program is inspired by my combination of experiences in recovery from drug addiction and 17 years of business leadership. It is meant to help anyone, non-addict and recovering addict alike, learn how to live and lead mask-free. If you are someone struggling with addiction, I want to be absolutely clear. Get help immediately. This book is built around my experience in recovery, but it is in no way a replacement for an actual drug and alcohol recovery program. There are tons of quality resources out there, such as 12-step programs, rehab facilities, therapists, and detox centers. Find one. You can survive and thrive professionally using the concepts in this book, but only after you start your recovery. If you are living in the U.S., you can visit www.samhsa.org or call 211 for help. Chapter 1, Footnote 2. People in recovery from addiction typically have a term they use to describe the length of time that they are not participating in that addiction. The most popular term is quote-unquote sober. I was taught to say quote-unquote clean in my specific recovery program, so I personally use that term. If you are in recovery, no matter what you were addicted to, what program you are in, or whatever term you use to communicate your time in recovery, I respect, embrace, and love you all.